know what you're all thinking. Looks like Rain Man and E.T. had a baby. Boy, it just keeps getting better. Someone stole my identity. Now he has no life. Well, summer's here, and like you, my thoughts turn to death. Wouldn't it be neat if you knew what day you were gonna die, but not the year? Wow. Politics, man, I finally figured politics out. An oil man became president, and gas went to $4.50 a gallon. I hope we never elect a pimp. You guys have been great, thank you.
Predictably drunk, smart people talking about stupid things, and you just heard the man, the myth, the legend, Larry Bubbles Brown. And some of you are going, who is Larry Bubbles Brown? That clip that I just played was actually from one of his David Letterman appearances a few years back. Larry Bubbles Brown is a legend in Bay Area comedy. He's been in the Bay Area scene, in and around it, I should say, since the 80s. He's actually in a new documentary called Three Still Standing. Easy for me to say. Three Still Standing. And it's about three iconic Bay Area comedians who started during the 80s, during the boom, when Robin Williams and everybody was starting out and having a great time, and chronicles their rise through the 80s, the 90s downturn in comedy, and nobody could even get a job. And these three guys, they pretty much powered through it and made a living doing stand-up comedy on the road and in clubs and in back bars through the dark times. And now here they are in 2016 now, still working. Larry Bubbles Brown, one of the three still standing. And the reason I'm playing him is I actually got a chance for the first time to work with Larry recently. And by the way, Matt Somerville is here. I'm a bad host. I keep forgetting to introduce you.
Was that cough audible? I thought I turned off the mic for that. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I always let you do your intro, which, by the way, I'm convinced that you're making this person up. I've never heard of him either.
Larry Bubbles Brown, you guys can Google, Bing, or YouTube him. I swear to God, this dude was on David Letterman. He's the opener for Dana Carvey. Whenever Dana Carvey goes back on the road, he calls Larry and says, get on the road with me. He might be somebody that is more more well-known for the weird sound that he makes on stage than anything else. Usually after about every joke, he does this little meh thing, which seems really weird, but it kind of works when you see the visual of what he looks like and what the face he makes when he does it. But no, he's a legend, man. The dude's been around forever. And I actually just did a show with him at a place called The Huddle, which is a sports bar in Fremont, California. And he came up to me afterwards and said, out of all the bad comedians, you are the least bad, which I thought was very nice.
It's a backhanded nice compliment.
Well, I returned the favor and said, out of all the big name iconic comedians that I've worked with, you are by far the least well known. So, you know, we bonded over insults and
Yeah, you should have told him, of all the comedians that are old, I'm the least surprised that you're still alive.
You know, the thing about Larry, which the whole reason why I'm bringing this up and why I'm promoting him is, A, I always like to promote a comedian that either I know or is a Bay Area person, because I live in the Bay Area and I do comedy in the Bay Area, so why not? And the other reason is that, you know, like I said, I just did a show with him. Anytime you get to share a stage with somebody who is an icon, who's been doing this for 30 years, you absolutely do it, whether it's at, you know, a big time club or just a shitty little sports bar. And this is the definition of a shitty little sports bar. We had, I don't own it, but the venue had, they're going through renovations, we'll put it that way. And they have garbage bags as the backdrop on their stage. So, my career is going very well in comedy, if you could not tell.
Yeah, they paid you in leftover ranch cups for hot wings?
Nope. I got paid. I actually got paid, unless you're the IRS, then I did not get paid. But I got paid by the promoter, whose name is Jesus Cruz, which is actually a very good transition into what I wanted to start to talk about. And that is the fact that Jesus Cruz booked me for this show. And Jesus Cruz is a local promoter, obviously, slash comedian. And I met him about a year ago. I did a show with him at a restaurant, if I'm not mistaken, about a year ago. And we haven't really spoken too much. But he kind of calls me up out of the blue in November of last year and says, hey, I'm running this show again. I've been doing it for a few months. I'd love to have you come in one time if it works out. So we negotiated some dates, and here we are. I opened for Larry Bubbles Brown. So selfishly, it worked out for me because I've wanted to meet Larry for a while. But secondarily, and this is where it starts to get weird, Matt, is that I was sitting at home about a week before the show, and I've been all over recently. I was in San Diego for a weekend, and then I came back to the Bay Area for a show, and then I went back down to San Luis Obispo for some appearances. It's been crazy. I've been on the road here for a little bit, so I'm happy to be home again. But I was getting ready. I was kind of doing laundry and preparing to go right back out on the road, and I get an email from Jesus, and he says, this is going to be a weird question, but did you used to be a professional wrestler for a group called APW, All Pro Wrestling? And it's very weird because I was a professional wrestler for a group called APW about 15 years ago. So obviously, based on the question, I know that he already knows that I used to be a professional wrestler. What really boils down to is, how does he know? I mean, it wasn't something that I did for a very long time, and it was right before the explosion of the internet. So there was no MySpace, Facebook, any of that stuff that's out there today, although MySpace is already come and gone, but it wasn't around. So it stands to reason, how did this happen, right? So come to find out, Jesus Cruz used to be the official videographer, I guess,
no
for this
shit.
Wrestling corporation that I was a part of. And as he, you know, as most of us do, he has networks of friends. And when he got into comedy and he promoted this show that I did with Larry Brown, he put my photo on the flyer. Well, a guy that I went through the wrestling academy with saw the flyer, called Jesus and goes, hey, I know that guy. I used to go to wrestling school with that guy. So Jesus was like, no shit. So he goes, all right, well, I'm going to confirm. So he calls me up and we talk about it. And yep, sure enough, not only was he around because we started naming names that were all in the same class and, you know, all the events that we did. He goes, you know, I filmed everything back then. So chances are, if I were to go into my attic, and he goes, I pretty much label everything. I probably have you from training. I probably have you from events. I probably have you on tape throughout your entire wrestling career, which to me, I've never seen myself in the ring. Like I said, it was really before people had cameras and camera.
Yeah, that must have been a real tape, like a Betamax tape, when he says, I have it on tape.
He says, it's actually on tape. And that's what he said. He goes, I would love to give you the tape. And I'm like, that's great, but can you figure out a way to, you know, digitalize it?
Because buy me a VCR?
Yeah, yeah. So he's looking for it probably as we speak. And I'm hoping if I can get that tape that we can somehow get it on the internet and we can share it with the audience. Because I think it'd be a trip to see a teenage Sam Marcoux getting thrown around the ring by these big behemoths of men. And just seeing me get my ass kicked from pillar to post. And as it turns out, the dude's actually running a wrestling school now and invited me to come down and just take a look at everything and just be around it. So I think I'm going to take him up on the offer. I think it'd be kind of fun, kind
Hell
of nostalgic.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it was kind of a weird paths crossing, worlds colliding, whatever you want to call it, man. Because it's been 15 years since I've been in a wrestling ring, or since I've even been around the industry. And for just a random flyer inside of a sports bar to elicit these memories from a guy that I went to wrestling school with. Shout out to Mario, by the way. Mario and Darnell, who are the two guys that recognized me. Darnell actually just had a movie that was picked up. The dude wrote a movie, got picked up in Hollywood and made. And I believe it's on Amazon Prime now. And Mario is auditioning for a bunch of martial arts movies here, there.
Does Darnell's movie have a name? Can we pimp it here?
It does. I believe it's called The Mind of a Serial Killer. I don't think it was released in theaters, but I do think it was picked up. It was rewritten and made, and kind of a low budget thing. I believe it was The Mind of a Serial Killer. If I'm wrong, Darnell, please don't kick my ass. I finally got over the ass whooping you gave me 15 years ago.
Shout out to Darnell kicking Sam's ass. Now, for anyone in the audience who doesn't know, we were friends back during this period of time, period in time for Sam.
Correct.
I don't recall if you ever had a wrestling name. Were you ever given a persona?
So I was in the academy for about a year, And I was very skinny, and I was very much a freak when it came to being able to dislocate my joints, which is what I'm paying for now in my 30s. But it kind of got to a point where I was sparring with people like Dilip Singh, who went on to be the great Khali, and some big names in the wrestling industry. And the reason for it was that I could take a nasty bump. I could sell really well for the big guys. And it got to a point where at one point for the promoter, I had two wrestlers pull my arms out of the socket and basically tie them behind my back. And the promoter just went, "Wow, you're a freak." And at the time, he had a stable, a group of wrestlers that their gimmick was the Freak Show, and they were all kind of like dark circus type of characters. So I was very briefly known as the Freak in the Freak Show, and I think I made one or two appearances, dislocated my arms, and that was about it. So I guess, but not really. I mean, when you're on the indie scene, you run through a lot of gimmicks before you kind of find something that sticks. It's almost like doing comedy, where you have a lot of stuff when you start that you throw out there until you kind of start figuring out your voice and your tempo and your personality and how to do it the right way. So I left the business well before I got that established. But yeah, I guess if anything,
I don't think that was a gimmick that would have had lasting power, given the strength of one's joints. That probably would have ended pretty soon after you had started it.
The first time they put a shoulder breaker on me and I started screaming like a bitch in front of about 300 or 400 people in the audience, and they had to drag me out of there, I think it would have been, they would have changed the name from the Freak to the Crybaby, and pussy. I think that would have...
Sam and I met freshman year of high school for me, and it was senior year for Sam, and we met in cooking class, and back then I was so into wrestling myself that I swear half of my wardrobe were Stone Cold Steve Austin, 316 shirts, The Rock, Mankind, all of that shit. So,
you were quite the popular fellow. Based on those t-shirts alone. And for the record, if you guys did not hear that correctly, yes, I was in a freshman cooking class my senior year.
Let's talk about that instead.
If I have any minors that are listening to this show, again, the show is called Predictably Drunk. You shouldn't be listening to it. But if you are listening, just do me a favor. Pay attention in math class. That's all I'm saying. Otherwise, you're taking these bullshit freshman electives in your senior year, and you meet these assholes named Matt Somerville wearing the Rock t-shirt in cooking class.
And they never go away. I'm still here. Fuck.
Still here. Your gimmick would be the mosquito or the cockroach, if you were a wrestler. You just can't kill them off.
That would be me. I would wear these shirts, and Sam very, very quickly presented himself as a sarcastic asshole to the teacher. I believe her first question of the class, first day of class, was, what's everybody's cooking abilities? And I don't know verbatim, but I believe Sam was the first to raise his hand and boasted a mean skill of buttering toast. And I'm like, I like that guy. That guy could be friends with me. We could get along. And then we eventually just started bullshitting about wrestling. And we actually did. We did wrestling in my backyard about three or four times that freshman year.
That's right. We had a backyard wrestling fed, which, I roll my eyes at now. But another thing that we probably have on tape somewhere in one of our parents' houses somewhere of you throwing your friend off the top of your roof through a table and me slamming an actual chair over my best friend, Steve Curry, the predictably drunk medical professional on this show, hit him in the head with a steel chair and gave him a nasty concussion. We were very dangerous adolescents.
And when
sure.
you say through a table, you're using the word through lightly. The idea, on paper, he was to go through the table, but he overshot it and landed just on the ground horribly.
Best thing about this. So if I could cut in, I was the special guest referee, quote unquote, and Matt Somerville and another guy named Tony were in the main event of this backyard wrestling fed where there was no rules, no disqualifications, no anything. Yep. They somehow structured the match so that they were on top of Matt Somerville's mom's roof. They're on the roof of the house, and at one point they were going to, they set up a mattress with a table over it, and Matt was going to throw Tony off the roof through the table, and that was going to be the end of the match. Tony would have been out as he landed on the mattress if all went to plan. The best part about it is right before it was supposed to happen, Tony, I wouldn't even say chickened out. He came to his senses is probably the right yeah. way to do it. And he says, look, man, we're on the roof. It's the three of us. And he's like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to get thrown off the roof. This is really going to yeah. hurt. And Matt, this was supposedly Matt's best friend. Matt goes, don't be a pussy. If you quit, I'm throwing you regardless. And somehow talked Tony into doing this. Matt, quote unquote, throws Tony. Tony jumps at the same time that he's getting thrown, overshoots the table completely, and lands just in the most sickening human thud on the ground I've ever heard in my life. And it was just like, well, this is a
mistake. And to be clear, this was not a backyard with soft grass or turf or anything like that. It was hard as shit ground. And
it was like dirt and rock.
It was pretty rough. And I think that was probably the biggest one that we had ever done because, you know, we had those guys come in from Danville. It was like a separate federation of backyard wrestling. This is a whole thing. And one of them got his earring embedded in the middle of his ear. I don't know if you remember that, but there was just blood everywhere. The earring was stuck inside of this dude's earlobe. I gotta say now that I'm pretty thankful that my mom doesn't listen to the show because I don't think I ever told her about all that. It was always a scramble to get home from school at like 2:45, set everything up, get through the shit, and be done and cleaned up by like 6 p.m. And we did it. We did it like three or four times, like I said. We always got away with it. So if my mom does listen to this show, my bad, Mom.
Yeah, I guess if we'd spent more time doing homework instead of throwing each other off roofs and embedding earrings into each other's heads, we'd have maybe better prospects of a future. But whatever, it was fun. Fuck
yeah, it was great. No, it was so fun. It was so fun. I'm going to shift things now and tell everyone what I'm drinking because it's so goddamn tasty.
I was about
tasty.
To get to that. We are predictably drunk. And by the way, before you jump into that, I am once again drinking the Denogonizer. I still have a little bit left from the growler that I had from Christmas. So before it goes bad, if you don't know, you can have a growler in your fridge unopened for a while. But once you open it, you've got about a week or two before the shit goes bad. So all you people that have a growler that's open in your fridge, if it's more than a week or two, throw it out and just get it refilled. That's a little life tip from Sam to you from Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. I'm right on the border, so I might start seeing weird things if this beer goes bad in the next half hour or so. What are you drinking?
That'll make for an interesting show. I'm drinking Dogfish Head Indian Brown.
Ooh, Dogfish Head is a very, very popular brewery on the East Coast.
Is it really East Coast? I didn't know that.
Yep. Yes, it is.
I just drink it. I don't know about it. I just drink it.
Yeah, they. I want to say they're out of Maine, if I'm not mistaken. I'll look them up. But I've had conversations with many people who say that their IPA, which is their version of the double IPA, the 90-minute IPA, right, is better than Pliny the Elder, which is just
quite a statement.
It's whorish behavior, and I don't think anybody should ever actually say that. They're actually out of Milton, Delaware. So, yes, they're very much an East Coast brewery. But what the hell else are you supposed to do in Delaware? It better be good.
Yeah, here. Like Wayne's World. I'm in Delaware. Yeah. So you got recognized by this guy. What was that like for you?
It was a little bit weird, and I'm not sure how to get used to it. So I'll give you a little bit of a backstory here. 2015 for me for comedy was by far I consider it a success. At the beginning of the year, I laid out about four or five goals that I wanted to accomplish. I absolutely hit every single one of those goals. About halfway through the year, I started getting to the point in my comedy career where I would be walking down the street and people would recognize me. And it was not once or twice, but every now and then, you know, it became part of what I do. People that I've never told that I did comedy before, all of a sudden knew I did comedy because they found me online or they saw me on a website or they saw a flyer or whatever the case may be. And that's fine. It's still a little bit weird. It's a little bit awkward when that happens, but it wasn't that big of a deal. Where it started to get weird is three things. One of them, I did a show last January, so about a year ago, And the show was about 250 to 300 people large. It was a show that I helped produce. It was outside of the comedy club venue. It was outside of the normal circuit of comedy. We basically rented a hall, me and three or four of my friends. We put the whole thing together. We sold it out. We had a great time. All the comics got paid, and it was awesome. The very next night, I was booked to do a show in Monterey, California, for one of the traditional comedy clubs, and I'm walking through town, and I got recognized two or three times from people who were at the show the night before. And they decided, you know what, we're going to come to your show tonight because now we know you're in town and what you're doing, and we had a great time last night. We're going to show up. And then they came to the show, and then they like hang out with you afterwards. And that was weird because it's almost like having actual bona fide fans, you know, and instead of just like, oh, you hang out with people after a show, that's one thing, but you hang out with somebody who is only coming to the show because they've seen you before and now they want to see you again, and they hang out after that just to be around you and kind of sniff your jock for luck, lack of a better term. That's
it is weird.
That's a new level. It's a new level, you know? And then the wrestling thing was weird because it's just it's such a small world and the connection is so obscure. And just a decade and a half ago, like, I haven't talked to Mario and Darnell in forever, and they just happened to come across a flyer for a small show. I would say a small show that I do. And, you know, here we are talking about it on a podcast, and I'm about to get footage of me as a teenager doing all this wrestling. So that was a little bit weird to get recognized 15 years later, although also flattering because apparently I haven't aged too terribly from all the drinking that people can still recognize my name and face. I've alluded to it before on this show, and I never really talked about it too much, but for me, so far, the strangest thing is something that sounds like it's right out of a movie or a TV show was my biological father, who I don't know. I know who he is, but he reached out and tried to friend me on Facebook. Right. He tried to get a hold of me on social media, which I alluded to before, and started finding out where all my shows were and saying he was going to go to these shows. Now, he's never showed up to these shows, but it was very strange for me to have that happen. So, yeah, that in terms of, I'm not going to say fame, but in terms of that level of notoriety, it's a little bit of an adjustment, to say the least.
Well, I mean, for him to not say a goddamn thing to you for, you know, 45 years or however old you are, and then all of a sudden, now that you're doing things that's getting your name out there, getting your face out there, for him to just pop up and say, hey, what's going, you know, I mean, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, and blatantly obvious to the point where, again, it's something that was written out of a movie. You know, it's like, oh, the guy gets famous, and then all of a sudden his long-lost father shows up and wants a piece of the action, which, by the way, if you're not in the comedy business, trust me, unless your name's Dave Chappelle or Chris Rock or, you know, Mike Myers or somebody like that, there's not a lot of money for me to share with anybody else, okay? I usually get paid in free drinks and tips. Like, I got paid in tips the other night, which was great, and thank you for getting me money and paying me money, which is almost more respectful, actually, when people put money down to say that was good enough that I'm going to pay you some money. There's not a lot of money in it. I mean, you can get enough to scrounge by, but it's a job. It's a job just like anything else. I mean, you have to write stuff, you have to perform stuff, you have to promote yourself, you have to do things like podcasts, you have to do all kinds of appearances and weird stuff and travel and stay in shit hotels and everything else that you have to do in order to make ends meet as a professional comedian. And, I've been lucky enough in my career that, A, I have enough talent that helps, because there's a lot of lack of talent within the comedy world, unfortunately, and B, I happen to know some people that have looked out for me when I wasn't so good and dragged me along to the point where I'm decent, but I guess he thinks I'm more successful than I am and probably has more money than I do, and that's it's such a blatant money notoriety grab that it's insulting in many ways.
Yeah, and I mean, first of all, on the first note, where those people, sorry, everybody, I'm sorry.
Did you just apologize for drinking and burping on a show called Politically Drunk Smart People Talking About?
I'm now apologizing
things?
For apologizing. I'm sorry.
We'll accept that one.
the thing of people wanting to hang out with you, the people that you've never met before. It's such a weird phenomenon that happens when someone either understands that they're in the same room as a famous person, or just thinks that they're around someone who is famous. Because you're not famous, but you have notoriety, though. People do know you. You're not famous. You will be, I think. That's my opinion. But it's not quite there yet. But this weird thing happens, and I know it because I've felt it myself. When you're around these people, these famous people, actors, comedians, whoever it is, everyone in the room wants to be around that person. There could be 200 people in a room. There could be 4 people in a room. Every one of those people wants to just be around that person, hang out with them, leave with them, like go get coffee with them, go drinking with them. Like it's just this weird thing that happens. I guess they see them on TV. They see them in films. Maybe they grow up with them, you know, watching their movies, watching their comedy acts. And then when they finally get them in person, they are without a doubt the coolest person in the room, and you're instantly drawn to them. And it's just this weird thing. It happens every time. So get used to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, for the most part, I enjoy the conversations that I have with people. What's weird is when they reference my stand-up material and I have no fucking clue what they're talking about. And it's shit that I've said on stage, but I just don't get it. Like, it happened to me. I was walking down the street and this guy's like, "Hey, there's the guy with the STD." Now, if you've seen my act, I have this joke about contacting an STD, and it has to do with basically I call having a child being an STD. But when you're walking down the street and you're in public and you're across the street on a major, major intersection of San Jose downtown, and the guy yells out, "There's the guy with the STD," it really doesn't make me feel too great about going across the street and saying hello to you. It's like, I don't know who this guy is or what he knows, but apparently I need a new doctor because he's not he's not keeping my business to himself. But yeah, it's a weird shout out. But it's also, look, if you're doing comedy, you're doing anything, you're literally on stage saying, "Look at me." So it comes with the territory and you have to get used to it, or at least deal with it, even if you don't get used to it. But, you know, it was cool. I mean, even the show that I did the night before we broadcast this, I have this bit about the 49ers and the Raiders, and it was very much a pro 49ers crowd. And I could tell this guy at the back of the bar was not happy with my 49ers jokes, and he was kind of coming at me a little bit. And, you know, big dude, this guy was about like 6'4", and he's probably close to 300 pounds, and he looked like he could handle himself. And, you know, I finally was able to get out of it because he was walking towards the stage, and I just said, "Sir, I can't hear you from last place. Can you please speak up over Seattle, Arizona, and St. Louis?" And, you know, he kind of laughed at that because it was a pretty good burn as being a San Francisco 49ers fan. And then I disarmed him and said, "Look, dude, I'm a Miami Dolphins fan because have you seen our colors? Apparently my mom wanted a girl." And that was it. That was the end of it. It was done. I was self-deprecating and he was fine. And we actually shook hands afterwards. But I thought he was going to kick my ass, which is another thing that's been going on here recently, is I've had a lot of people wanting to kick my ass in comedy here recently.
I mean, I want to kick your ass.
I think that's
friends.
Weird. Yeah, but I mean, other comics, I did a roast here recently of Kabir Singh, and I closed it out. I was, I guess, the roast master, if you want to call it that. And apparently I was very mean to a few people to the point where other comics were like, "Let's go outside. I want to settle this right now." And I'm like, "No, I'm not going to do that.
Desire.
I'm going to sit here and drink with these strangers that want to have a beer with me instead."
Yeah, so this happened to you this twice in recent shows, one being last night.
Yeah, I did a show. This is being recorded on a Monday. I did a show on a Sunday, and I was on stage, and it was a sports bar. And to be honest, you know, it was funny too because the other comics were like, "Man, this is a really rough crowd." Like, we had a really good sized crowd, but they weren't laughing at a lot of stuff. And sometimes that's not the comedian's fault. Sometimes people just show up and refuse to laugh, and it's not the comic's fault. And I didn't think the comics were particularly bad last night either, but I didn't think that the audience was that bad either. I just thought, you know what, you got to find out what's going to make them laugh. And at some point, you go, "We're in a sports bar during the NFL playoffs. Chances are these people like sports." And if you look around and you see that half the crowd are wearing, you know, Golden State Warriors jerseys and San Francisco 49ers jerseys and, you know, Oakland A's hats, it's a good chance that they're going to react to sports humor. So if you have sports jokes, you go to it. And I have a lot of sports jokes, so I went to it and I had really good reactions from the crowd. So the audience was fine with me, except, you know, the guy got a little offended when I started talking shit about the Niners, but that's fine.
But that's correct, though. They had a horrible year.
They lost to the Cleveland Browns, Matt. You can't lose to a team that's not even an actual football team and not expect to get shit talked about you.
Yeah, that's pretty silly. Then the other night, what you were talking about just before, the roast, tell us what happened there. I have, to a certain extent, knowledge of what went down, but I don't know everything.
Yeah, so there's a comedian, and I want to get him on the show, which, by the way, I'm also kind of going back to the beginning of the show. Larry Bubbles Brown is going to be on the show, which I'm very excited about in the future. That's going to be a fun podcast, so stay tuned for that. But the comedian that the offended comedian is Rick James. Now, if you're saying, I know the name Rick James, that's because there is a sketch on Dave Chappelle where Dave Chappelle played Rick James, who was an R&B singer, most notably singing Super Freak. You have all heard the song Super Freak. Rick James, his real name is Drew. He goes by Rick James on stage just for the joke of saying, you guys were all thinking that somebody darker was going to come on stage tonight because the real Rick James is black. This Rick James is not. And it's a weird stage name to take. You know, usually if you have a stage name in any sort of industry where you're going to be on a stage, you don't take a name of somebody who's already fucking famous. It's just kind of one of those things, like, you know, like, oh, I'm going to be a singer. I'm going to go by Madonna, and I'll just spell it with two D's instead of one. No, you don't do stuff like that. It's not cool. So Rick James, he spells it R-I-C with no K, unlike the singer who spells it with a K. Rick James is also born with nine fingers instead of 10.
What the fuck is happening?
Yeah, well, this he's a weirdo.
I immediately want to fight this person, and I think I would win because I have the advantage of one additional finger.
Yeah, I mean, it does help. It's a definite advantage. The kill shot here is that Rick James is going through divorce, and that sucks. You don't ever want a friend, and he is a friend of mine. You don't want somebody to go through divorce. The problem is it's a roast, and Rick James showed up a couple weeks after a pretty devastating thing that happened in his life. And you can't show up as a comedian to a roast and not expect to get fucked with. It's the whole point of having a roast. He should have stayed home. Now, to his credit, he took himself off the roast and said, I don't think I can handle being roasted. I'm just here to hang out. So most comics backed off. I said, fuck that. Here's my opportunity. So the joke that really kind of got him fucked up was I said, Rick James is here, and Rick James has been missing for a while, but Rick James is used to missing things. He's missing a K from his first name, a finger from his right hand, and a wife from his marriage. And, you know, that was enough for him to get very upset. The other comics were kind of like, uh-oh, this is what's happening. And I could hear him because I taped the whole thing. I could actually hear him say, you want to take this outside. Now, Rick was very drunk in his defense. And I've since seen him, and he has no recollection of that night. He has no hatred towards me. I have no hatred towards him. It was a roast. It's what you do. And I want to get him on the show, but only if he's willing to talk about certain things in his life that right now I don't think he's ready to talk about. So at some point we'll have Rick in when the wounds heal, we'll get him back. But no, that was the joke that set him off, and a couple other comics sat me aside and said that was too much, and I said, no, it wasn't. You're an asshole. And so, yeah, I'm getting a reputation of being kind of a jerk, apparently.
Well, that's what you do in a roast. You be a jerk. And if you can't be a jerk, then you shouldn't be at a roast. And if you can't handle other people being jerks to you, you should not be in occupancy. You should not be there, regardless of whether or not you're a part of the roast. Just don't show up. Go stay home and get drunk.
Go away. Yeah, I mean, I hit people in the audience who were making groans after certain jokes. I mean, there was no holds barred. It was a long night. I figured I had to get out there, be loud, be obnoxious, get in people's face and wake them up to end the roast. And that's exactly what I did. I considered it a success. I thought it was great. So That's what's going on in my life, man. A lot of traveling, a lot of weird notoriety things going on, and just some fights.
Yeah.
So some fake fights. So it makes sense considering this is kind of a pro wrestling podcast.
So last note of this show, hypothetical, what are you going to do if you go to a show, you get through your set, show ends, you know, people are meeting and greeting on their way out, and some motherfucker walks up to you and says, hey, I'm your dad.
That is a great question.
We weren't ready for that question. I pounced that one on Sam, and maybe it was unfair to do. Maybe
I'm looking at my show notes, Matt. I don't see that question on here.
Part of the transcripts that covers this. We could say,
for the record, we actually don't have show notes.
Nope.
So
we wing the shit out of this.
Kind of doing this off the and you know what? And I got to tell you, by the way, since Matt has joined the show permanently. I don't know if it's the Matt effect or if it's just the natural progression that it was going to happen. Otherwise, I'll give Matt the credit. The show has been very popular, so I want to thank the listeners out there.
Oh, yeah.
I do look at the stats. The stats have been trending upwards since about December, which means I think the show is starting to catch on a little bit more than even it
That's
had
great.
Before. So thank you very much, and I say this for a couple of reasons. If you're listening on iTunes, go ahead and click, you know, 5 stars, 4 stars. I don't care. Just rate the thing. It helps us out. It gets us more notoriety, gets more listeners, which means we'll ultimately have some sponsors, and we can bring more stuff and do more stuff for you. If you're listening via Stitcher Radio, thank you for listening via Stitcher Radio. If you're listening through the website, sammarcoux.com or predictablydrunk.com, thank you very much. Or if you're just pulling the RSS feed and putting it through your channels, thank you again. It's been a blast. And to answer your question, I don't know. I honestly don't know how I would react to that. I guess it would, I think I would probably walk away. I think that would be the best course of action for a number of reasons.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I would do in that scenario, but I don't have the tools to begin to relate to that.
No, let me ask, is he buying beer or is he just asking or saying I'm your dad?
I think he would want to drop that bomb first. Thinking this is something that you want to hear after the 96 years that you spent on this earth, but it'd be beer after. I think he would be happy to buy beer after, but I don't know anything about the man. I don't know if he's living in a train car.
He's actually, I think he's living in a bowling alley up in Central Oregon.
I was pretty close
with
the train car thing.
No, a train car would have been way better because at least you could say, well, fuck this, I'm out of here. Bowling alley, you're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
You know? No, last I heard he was living in a bowling
alley.
Okay,
so I would say
there's my future.
No beer. I think the answer to that question is no beer. But yeah, I mean, I think he would just come right up to you and drop that bomb and probably have a lot of expectations from you. And I think that it's a fucking rock star move to just walk away. Cause I think, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I don't have, enough to relate to, but, that would be very difficult to not say something to that guy for me.
I guess if he has some free bowling passes, that might be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Midnight bowling.
So midnight bowling, man, a little bit of bleeps and bloops and all that fun stuff that goes on with the midnight bowling with the lights and the
fanciness.
And the strobes and all that fun shit. All the fanciness. Well, shit, man, that actually flew by. I'm not sure why that was like as fun and quick as it was, but it was. Let's just call it here, man. Let's just call this a show.
We'll do that. That was a show, and I would like to thank everybody too for listening. I doubt very seriously that I have anything to do with an increase of viewers, but if maybe that's,
well, not viewers, but definitely listeners.
Fuck off. I believe it's my wife and like two people I know who have upped the show's numbers. But in any case, if you're sitting there and you've spent 30 minutes listening to us talk about bullshit, you're fucking great. I love you. Don't ever contact me, to be clear. But I love you. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And this is Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. Until next time, everybody, keep drinking.